Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Jonathan Marshall, an award-winning journalist and researcher who is the author and co-author of five books on international relations and modern history, including the Iran-Contra Connection, Secret Teams, and Covert Operations in the Reagan Era, and The Lebanese Connection, Corruption, Civil War, and the International Drug Traffic. He has a five-part series of articles on foreign lobbying at Consortium News, the latest of which is Saudis Win Hearts by Lining Pockets. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jonathan Marshall.
Thank you very much.
And obviously there's a lot of focus on possible collusion between the Trump campaign and the Trump administration and Russia, and that's been dominating the news and will continue to. But your feeling is that there's a broader issue here, I take it, of how foreign money influences our politics, has been doing so for a long time and continues to do so.
That's right. I was thinking of the irony that this country spends over $600 billion a year on the military to defend ourselves and our national sovereignty. We spend a heck of a lot less defending our kind of cyber security. So we've seen that many institutions, ranging from the Clinton campaign to Sony Pictures, have been attacked by such intrusions. And thus we have questions about the integrity of the 2016 campaign and of our whole democratic process. But even worse is that we do almost nothing to protect ourselves from the influence of foreign money on our national politics. We have a rather pathetic law called the Foreign Agents Registration Act, which has almost never been really enforced. It's supposed to keep tabs on foreign money and the lobbyists in the United States who take that money to try to influence Congress and public opinion. But these lobbies can be very potent, can have a big effect on our policy, and we're doing almost nothing to track and control their operations.
Well, I suppose, though, just to continue the comparison to the Russian story and particularly, for example, the Saudis that you've written about in your latest of this five-part series on foreign lobbying at Consortium News, Saudis Win Hearts by Lining Pockets. We know about APEC, of course, the Israel lobby and its influence. The Saudis have been spending a lot of money for a long time, and other countries. And now with Trump, because of his problems with the emoluments clause of the Constitution, there's growing evidence that his foreign policy may almost entirely be influenced by which countries he has hotel deals with, like the Saudis. He has a great deal with them. He has a bad deal with the Qataris, who happen to be the victims now of Saudi foreign policy. He has dealings in the Philippines, which may be why he was so nice to that murderous leader there. And he also has dealings in with Erdogan's Turkey, involving some of Erdogan's cronies. And, of course, he was the first to congratulate Erdogan for this recent referendum that was largely stolen, and which no other European country wanted to acknowledge. So,
and don't forget his 180-degree turnaround on China, which he went from blasting in the strongest of terms as a currency manipulator, an unfair trader, and threat to the United States. Now he has a love affair with the Chinese regime, which just happened to coincide with them granting his trademark and copyright requests and opening lots of doors to his business interests. Really, it almost puts his alleged Russian connections to shame.
So I suppose you could say we've always had a government for sale for foreign buyers, and now we have a government for sale and a president for sale. But just to touch on the Russian thing, I don't think we've ever had a foreign country interfere with our elections, not just money. I don't know how much money was spent, very little as far as I can tell, except, you know, for the Russian oligarchs who've been funding Trump since Wall Street blackballed him, but that's another issue. But no other foreign power has unleashed its intelligence services and thousands of troll farms full of paid hackers that work for Russian intelligence. That's a whole other ballgame, isn't it?
Certainly, if these allegations are true, and I think we should concede that they're as yet unproven, but
what's unproven? That they hacked the elections? They hacked the DNC and Podesta, etc.
There is no publicly available evidence that proves, to my mind, that the Russian government was behind the hacking of the Clinton campaign. Someone hacked their emails, or at least disclosed them. The Democrats hired a private security firm, which concluded that the Russians were behind it. But the details have not been released to the public to really give us confidence in that finding. So basically, you have to either choose to believe the assertions of U.S. intelligence leaders or decide to wait for the evidence. But the evidence really isn't public yet. So I'm somewhat agnostic. I don't dismiss it by any means, but I'm waiting for the evidence to come in. But let's assume for the moment that the Russians were behind it. That would be a first, but I'm not sure it would be true to say that no other foreign government has intervened in an American election. Certainly, the Israeli government, for example, for many years has had a strong interest in electoral outcomes, and its supporters in the United States have been in very close communication with the Israeli government, have over the years, starting with the Truman administration, made their campaign contributions and other political support often decisively based on presidential promises to Israel. And I think that may have helped swing President Truman's decision to recognize Israel in 1948, for example, when he faced an extremely close election for the presidency. So I think historians might quibble with the idea that this is the first intervention, but it's certainly the first cyber intervention of its kind that we know of.
Right, that was more or less what I was suggesting, is that with a foreign intelligence service, particularly one that as sophisticated as the Russian one, obviously the Israelis have always had AIPAC and had enormous influence, largely through the Democratic Party, but now they're even more so through the Republican Party, through the so-called Christian Zionist movement. And it was no secret, for example, that Netanyahu supported Romney against Barack Obama. It was pretty overt. So,
and then quite overt that he supported Trump over Obama.
Right. Well, let's pick up that again, because you mentioned it'd be Trump over Hillary, wouldn't it?
Yes, I'm sorry. First, he was supporting Netanyahu over Obama in terms of the controversy over the Iran nuclear deal, which, ironically, many, if not most, top Israeli security officials supported, albeit somewhat reluctantly, because they realized that curbing a potential nuclear program by Iran was in Israel's security interests. Netanyahu, however, was much more militant, really wanting the Obama administration to all but go to war with Iran to serve his vision of Israeli interests. We need to have a distinction between Israeli interests, which are a matter of opinion, and many people would disagree over what they are, and Netanyahu's vision of them, which were very hardline indeed. Following Netanyahu's failure to overturn Obama's deal with Iran, he then quite clearly threw his support to Trump over Clinton. Clinton had been an ardent supporter of Israel, promised to meet with Netanyahu in her first month in office. She was supported by an Israeli-American billionaire. She was a very strong supporter of Israel, but Netanyahu wanted an even more right-wing supporter, and he pretty clearly threw his weight behind Trump, to the point where Trump was getting a huge ovation in his speech to AIPAC, which was actually quite a violation of AIPAC's protocol, which was to be nonpartisan.
Sure. And again, I'm speaking with Jonathan Marshall, an award-winning journalist and researcher who is author or co-author of 5 books on international relations and modern history, including the Iran-Contra connection, secret teams and covert operations in the Reagan era, and the Lebanese connections, corruption, civil war, and the international drug traffics. He has a 5-part series of articles on foreign lobbying at Consortium News, the latest of which is Saudis Win Hearts by Lining Pockets. And of course, Donald Trump's son-in-law is now in Israel making a peace deal. He's going to solve this intractable Gordian knot of Israel-Palestinian peace. And, of course, Netanyahu, when Jared Kushner was growing up, he would have to cede his bedroom to Netanyahu, who was a regular house guest of his parents. So there's a tighter connection, that I think, even than Trump, through Trump's son-in-law to Netanyahu. But let's turn to the Saudis, because I think the Israeli situation is fairly well known. I don't know that they spend a lot of money. They just have a lot of political influence.
Well, Israel, unlike the other lobbies, probably does not spend a huge amount of money. What makes the Israel lobby so powerful is that its U.S. supporters spend a lot of money. They are, as you, I think, intimated earlier, a huge disproportionate source of funding for the Democratic Party and a very rapidly growing and large source of funding for the Republican Party, which makes it a very, very potent lobby indeed.
But it seems that the difference with the Saudis, from what I understand, is that the Saudis actually spend money on executive branch connections. They get top officials in the State Department, the Defense Department, and the intelligence services almost through a revolving door. And they also spend an awful lot of money on lobbying through Podesta's brother. We were talking about the hack against Podesta running the Hillary campaign. His brother, of course, has been one of the biggest recipients of Saudi money lobbying. And of course, in your article, you quote my friend, the former CIA officer Bob Baer, about the influence of Saudi money during the Bush and Clinton era, saying, quoting Bob, "Finding a high-ranking former U.S. official who isn't at least tangentially bound to Saudi Arabia is like searching for a teetotaler at a Phi Gamma Toga party."
So there you have it. Their strategy is rather simple and crude. Just throw money at almost everyone and see what sticks. They'll pump money into investment funds that politicians are involved with. They'll pump money into universities that will reflect on a politician. The Clinton Foundation, of course, got millions and millions of dollars. They are in one of their big lobbying campaigns. They just spent over $250,000 at Trump's hotel in Washington. Of all the hotel choices, of course, they spent it there. You alluded to their hotel deals. One of their hotel deals basically saved Trump from total business ruin some years ago. And now they're spending well over $1 million a month on high-priced lobbying firms with connections like the Podesta Group, big, big-time connections with the Democratic Party, but also firms that are deeply connected to the Republican Party. So they cover all their bases and throw money at the problem.
So let's go back to Citizens United. And you recall shortly after Citizens United came down from the Supreme Court, at the State of the Union, President Obama talked about the danger of Citizens United, the unaccounted money flowing in to political campaigns. And he mentioned flowing in also from foreign sources, at which one of these right-wing Tea Party Republicans got up and said, "You lie." And also the Supreme Court Justice who was sitting there, Alito, mouthed, "Not true." But it is true. These dark money vehicles that have been set up, these 501c4 so-called social welfare funds, there's nothing to stop foreign entities from pouring money into our campaigns as it is from the Koch brothers, is it?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not an expert on this. Certainly, the law would still bar foreign entities from directly funding political campaigns. But foreign money can fund issue campaigns, which, of course, are, in today's world, very difficult to distinguished from political campaigns. And it's the reason many of these entities continue to get tax exemption from the IRS, which has become completely toothless. So you may be right. I haven't seen many documented instances of large-scale funding of these dark money vehicles that are clearly going to a specific campaign, but that may be, in fact, a growing problem.
Well, I can't see what would stop Tony Podesta from setting up a 501c4 through his firm and calling it the Fund for American Democracy and having the Saudi money pour through and, you know, funnel it to whoever the Saudis wanted to support. I can't see
how... I don't believe that they could send it directly to support a candidate. But they could, for example, go into a congressional district and say, America needs all the allies it can get in the Middle East, and Saudi Arabia has been one of its staunchest allies, and isn't it too bad that Congressman X doesn't see the importance to American security of supporting, you know, America's Gulf state allies, including Saudi Arabia, and so on and so forth. So through such thin veils, one may indeed see that. I think probably foreign governments are being careful not to overstep, because that kind of thing could bring a huge backlash, even if it was temporarily viewed as legal. But I think in principle, you're right that that is a serious danger of the kind of freewheeling political situation we're in these days.
Well, but let's just look at, in the last couple of minutes here, let's look at the kind of Saudi money that was thrown at the Congress when they watered down, they tried to stop the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act that came out of 9/11, pushed by the 9/11 families. And they spent an awful lot of money, didn't they, the Saudis, through Congress? And they lost that battle.
Right, but we should be careful. They weren't pumping money into specific congressional campaigns. What they were doing, though, which is why it's so important that we have greater transparency and regulation of what goes on, they were, for example, recruiting veterans, U.S. Military veterans, under questionable pretenses, flying them all expenses paid, putting them up in suites at the Trump Hotel, which, of course, endeared them to the president, and then sending them into the halls of Congress to lobby against the legislation that Saudi Arabia was trying to overturn. So if you're a member of Congress, it's not that this money that you're now getting Saudi money to spend as you want, but you are getting a strong impression that your constituents, including veterans who probably who could be quoted on local TV and radio stations and either help or hurt you because of their credibility, these veterans are swarming your offices telling you how to vote. And most members of Congress are going to take that kind of thing very seriously. How much money Saudi Arabia has to pump into a campaign like that, they're going to be loath to cross Saudi interests.
Well, just in closing, Jonathan Marshall, what can be done here? This is really the for sale sign up is on the entire U.S. government. And as the former head of the FBI was railing against the Russians in his testimony, saying, you know, it's, you know, we have very vigorous debates in this country, but the idea of foreign government deciding who gets elected in America, that's just beyond the pale. So his indignation should be nationwide, but it should be broader than just the Russians. This is business as usual. That's.
I think we need to first broaden our inquiry much beyond the Russians. Secondly, we need to, with the First Amendment, we have to be careful about just banning money spent on political crusades that we may not like. But we can, at a minimum, demand full disclosure of where the money is coming from and what ends it's being put to. And I think we absolutely need that disclosure, and then we absolutely need the media to keep reminding us of where the money is coming from and where it's going. We see today the media frequently running opinion columns in the pages of the Washington Post and elsewhere that are coming from entities that are funded by foreign governments without any disclosure. And that's unconscionable. We need much better job from the media about telling us where this money is coming from, and a much better job from the Justice Department, and a much better job from Congress about demanding full disclosure and transparency.
Well, Jonathan Marshall, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
And again, I'm speaking with Jonathan Marshall, who's an award-winning journalist and researcher, who's the author, co-author of 5 books on international relations and modern history, including The Iran-Contra Connection, Secret Teams and Covert Operations in the Reagan Era, and The Lebanese Connection, Corruption, Civil War, and the International Drug Traffic. He has a 5-part series of articles on foreign lobbying at Consortium News, the latest of which is Saudis Win Hearts by Lining Pockets. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Disappeared by half.